How's it going, everybody? This is Tony Sakic, and this is the very first episode of the Decentralized Podcast, and we're here at the BitPay Dorms, which is actually right across the street from the BitPay headquarters, and I'm here with Gentry Cheryl, who is my co-host. And first and foremost, I wanted to give everyone a little breakdown of what this podcast is going to be. It is a discussion about everything decentralized, everything internet, everything technology, and anything that falls under those umbrellas. So Bitcoin, obviously, is a major subject here, but there is going to be a lot on blockchain, decentralized technologies, and various items under that umbrella. Again, I like to use that term apparently today. So we're really going to have a diverse array of subjects here. We do plan on going on many side spiels about different topics. So if this is something where you're looking to just hear about technology in a very hard format, we're not. We're going to be very loose here. And that's really what we're trying to aim for in our first guest, which we are very honored to have, Shooter Jennings, who is a very, very popular musical artist and the son of Waylon Jennings. He is a very big Bitcoin supporter and a very big supporter of everything under that label of decentralization. So with that being said, I'm going to shoot this over to Gentry.
Thanks, Tony. I'm Gentry Cheryl, and I am the Director of Client Operations at BitPay. I've worked here for about a year. Actually, I think it will be a year tomorrow. So happy anniversary to me. I basically run anything and everything that has to do with merchant or purchaser support, and also anything that needs to be done to help the company scale as far as information systems, integrating CRM, kind of all the stuff that nobody else picks up. I was not a hardcore Bitcoiner when I came to BitPay. I actually had only heard about Bitcoin through Silk Road, but I started to read about it, and I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. To me, it's really interesting as a technology more so than a political thing. We touch on that some more in the discussion with Shooter later in the episode. But I'm excited to be here and share my interests in technology and Bitcoin with all of you.
It's going to be awesome. I also work at BitPay, and I've been here for about 6 months. I'm the marketing manager. I handle a lot of the digital end that you see online. If you see a video, any kind of infographic, things like that, I'm usually the one that's posting that or putting it on there. The other thing we wanted to make sure to mention is that while we do definitely have an affiliation with BitPay, this is not a BitPay podcast. You will hear us talking about it because that's where we work, and Bitcoin is something that's central to both our employment and this podcast, but this is something a little different and outside the realms of BitPay. So we want to make sure that everyone knows that, if we talk about certain subjects here, it may not be representative of what BitPay thinks or their position on a certain subject. It's just really ours, more informal. There's really no input from BitPay other than the fact that we met there. So we definitely are huge fans of the company, though. So you will hear it mentioned a lot because they are a big player in the Bitcoin space, the biggest player in the Bitcoin space. And it's something where we all have that in common, and we all have a lot of other interests in common as well. So it's definitely, something that's really on the razor's edge of technology right now. And it has been for a couple of years, even though decentralized networks have existed for a very long time. Right now, they're becoming something more commonplace, and the usability is getting easier. And we're seeing a lot more major corporations, major companies that have big money behind them getting into this space. So we wanted to be a part of something like that. And that's what decentralized is all about. We want to make sure that, the people listening to this podcast, get some valid information from different from people who have different ideas. And some may agree, some may disagree. That's the point. So we don't want people that necessarily think that there's only one way or the highway, because there isn't with us. We really are open to having any conversation, and I'm sure it's going to wander off into other things besides decentralization. It's going to probably wander into art, technology, whatever else we want to talk about, because it's our podcast and we can do that. So it's pretty great like that. We do plan on coming at you once a week. We're going to have some cool things planned in the few months that we've already kind of got roughly planned on the schedule. We don't want to talk about it too early because there's a lot of things happening. But what we also want to do is talk a little bit about, what's new in this space, what's happening, what's coming up, and what technologies are really going to be happening in the next few years that we're trying to foresee, prognosticate, things like that. BitTorrent happened, what, about 11 years ago? Since then, Bitcoin is the next big thing to come out that really has defined the decentralization idea. So it's something where new technologies are going to be built on this. New technologies are going to utilize the blockchain. And there's going to be a lot of exciting things happening around this. And the other cool thing is some of the brightest people across a variety of industries are in this field. So we want to get as many of them as we can on this podcast to talk about it, talk about what they think will happen with it and what they think will come with it.
And, you know, Gentry, when you kind of got into this space and you started working at BitPay, what was your biggest shock? What kind of surprised you coming into this field that you weren't expecting?
Well, I mean, I can say that, you know, when I was leaving my other company, and I was actually in a more of a software development position there, and I was leaving to join BitPay, you know, everybody over there, you know, they didn't say it to me outright, but they definitely kind of were like, okay, what are you doing, you know, to go do this?
And, what are you doing with your life?
Really kind of, you know, and I've always been someone who, you know, I always rued the fact, which is probably a little dumb of me, that I wasn't a little bit older because I felt like I missed like the magic years of the, you know, internet boom. Mm-hmm. You know, I have that whole Napoleon complex where I sort of feel like, oh man, I could have been Zuckerberg, you know, if I was like 5 years older. And then all of a sudden, as I got into working at BitPay, you know, it wasn't just that, well, it's a startup and it's something where I can come in and be employee number 10 or 11 and really help build a company. But more specifically, it's a truly burgeoning technical field. I mean, this is a really cliche thing to say, but I really think it's accurate when you hear people compare where we are right now with Bitcoin and with blockchain technology to the internet in the early 1990s or late 1980s. We're very, in my opinion, very early in the evolution. Well, and for that matter, I would argue we're still early in the evolution of the internet and its technologies, but we're going to see a plethora of new companies, new businesses, new business models, and further disintermediation come out of all of these wonderful young minds and wonderful, you know, successful people sending their resources and having interest in Bitcoin. It's really been a watershed event, I feel like, over the past year. I mean, if you think about, you know, MT Gox closing down, and if you think about the giant crash from $1,100 or $1,200 a Bitcoin to, you know, $400, those are things that really could have easily, you know, I feel like knocked Bitcoin out, maybe if they'd happened a year or 2 years earlier. And yet Bitcoin has kept going. So, you know, I think we're past the tipping point, and it's really going to be a question of how quickly adoption occurs as opposed to whether adoption will occur.
Yeah, I also think it's inevitable, but I do have cautioned on how fast I think companies will integrate it. And I think it really depends on what the company's doing. And I think that's why you see companies like Newegg, Tiger Direct are some of the first to accept it, as far as larger, you know, multi-million-dollar companies and sometimes billion. I think they're the first because, you know, they are catering to that diehard tech base that is, you know, they're the first that checked out Bitcoin. So that makes sense. That makes complete sense. But as you see more and more larger companies coming on board, you know, you see random ones that don't necessarily fit the Bitcoin profile, like 1-800-Flowers or, yep, like, you know, things like that, where you go, huh, okay, well, that makes sense, I guess, you know, and then you think about it and you go, this is going to happen one after another. And, you know, right now, e-commerce is where Bitcoin shines. And it's really where it's his bread and butter. And I think everyone that worked, not everyone, but a lot of people that are working in the field kind of understand that. And they're realizing that, okay, this is really ideal right now for this. Now, when it comes to in-person payments and point-of-sale payments, I think there is some work that needs to be done. And I think that's something where every company in the field agrees. I don't necessarily hear anyone saying they have the all-in-one solution for in-person Bitcoin payments. You know, there's really good point of sale systems out there that are accepting it, and it's something that's getting better by the day. But we're not there yet for that. And in order to crack that nut, I think it's probably going to be another 6 months to a year at least. And then once that happens,
I think longer than that.
Yeah, it could be longer than that, absolutely. And that's why, yeah, at least.
I mean, because to me, there's a big gulf between, you know, functional, which I would argue that we're hitting now, meaning that, yeah, does it work? Sure. You know, you are able to transact. You can go buy a piece of pizza or, you know, a hot dog or whatever in physical person. But to get to where it's seamless, to where you don't even think about the fact that you're using something on top of the Bitcoin network, that's still, you know, a few years off, which is going to be really exciting because that's going to be an enormous opportunity for both companies that are currently in the space and new companies that are being built in, you know, dorm rooms and garages to come out of the woodwork and really abstract away some of the technical complexity and bring Bitcoin to, you know, the mainstream, so to speak.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think another part of when it becomes mainstream will be folks like Shooter Jennings, the folks that, you know, that you hear that talk about technology, but really are, you know, on the edge of that and are seeing kind of what's happening, where the venture funding is going, where money's going, where the brightest minds are going and things like that. And as more and more of them jump on board, you know, Joe Rogan talks a lot about it now. And Shooter was recently on his podcast, which I definitely recommend checking out because, you know, after you listen to ours, of course. It's really good. So I would say you hear people like that speaking intelligently on it. He's higher profile, and you're going to continue hearing higher profile people talking about this as the understanding becomes clearer and clearer, and as more and more people use it. Explaining someone, you know, the internet in 1993 or 1994 was way more difficult than it is now. Not just because now everyone knows it, but most people now have no idea how it works. They just know they type in www.facebook.com, they could talk to their grandma or their grandkids. They don't necessarily think, what's happening when I do that? And, you know, 20 years ago, you did have to know a little more than that to communicate with someone, which is, you know, the way all technology works. It becomes, you know, the first things are very expensive, although Bitcoin's a little different because of its nature. It's a protocol, not necessarily, you know, a physical thing. So it's a little different, but, you know, they become very difficult and hard to use, and they get easier and easier over time. And if you compare how easy a Bitcoin payment is now versus how it was 2 or 3 years ago, it's a very wide margin, very wide margin. Mobile wallets are much better. Every payment processing solution seems much better. There's a lot of things that are much better right now than they were then. And there's nothing to prove, or I should say, no other way to see that in 2 years, it looks like it'll be the same thing. 2 years, it'll be significantly easier on the same schedule, on the same scale, same schedule. I don't see that changing. I see the improvements being pretty static, as in how fast it improves throughout that time.
I mean, I would even argue that we should expect to see them accelerate. You know, there should be an exponential curve in terms of the rate of advancement. I mean, you know, if you think about, you know, ARPANET was first created in, I think, 1969 by the Army. And, you know, for over 20 years, it was just kind of the geeks in the military doing things on it. Then you have in the early to mid 90s, you know, sort of a resurgence of interest, and you start having your, you know, Dogpile and AltaVista and all the old search engines. And, you know, that brings a little more interest. And then you just think about the sheer volume of disruptive ideas and businesses. I mean, eBay, Amazon, PayPal, Facebook, Google, MySpace, Friendster, you know, Twitter, Airbnb, and now, of course, Bitcoin, BitPay, Coinbase, all those. You see a continual acceleration and proliferation of, you know, new business models and new ideas in the space that take the core technology and bend it in ways that make every single facet of our lives simpler or more effective.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this, I think that word disruption is something that's used quite often by a lot of tech companies that don't know what disruption is.
Well, disruption is not, for example, another app with an extra image filter.
Exactly, and it's not another social media app that this time lets you share 25-second videos instead of 20. I think that that's
I thought that was a great idea, actually.
That 5 second mattered a lot. I think that's funny, though, that a lot of, when you hear a lot of tech industry leaders or, you know, CEOs or CFOs or CIOs or whatever C-level they are talk about technology and disruption, it's almost humorous a lot of the times, because they'll say, we're disrupting the textile industry because we've reduced costs by 3 cents to make a shirt. It's like, well, that's not disruption. That's at all. You're not creating anything new. You're not creating a new process. And I mean, if you are to save it 3 cents, it's 3 cents. You're just reducing costs. You're really not disrupting anything. And I mean, there are companies that are doing it, but it's something where you really need to be in a completely new field. And, you know, I think that's why Bitcoin's so scary to some people, because it's disrupting money. And people are so used to money being something that, you know, they get in their paycheck, and either it goes in their bank account and they pay with a credit card, or they get $5 in $5 bills and they buy something with it with cash, that it has been their entire lives. It has been their entire parents' lives. So you're challenging that. And that's why there is such of a controversy behind it. And the people that get so angry behind it are so, you know, there's people that get really mad when you talk about Bitcoin. And I think it's something where to me, it's kind of funny, because I never got mad at it. I was always interested by it. I didn't understand it at first, but that was about 2 years ago. But I understand it now, and I understood it pretty quickly. And once I did, the light went off. And I think we talked to Shooter about this, but once that light goes off, it seems usually it goes off and you go, okay, I get it now. I see why people are so behind this. I see why, you know, it's not what a lot of less educated reporters or media members say, and I'm going to believe in this. And I think that's something we're wanting to do on this podcast as well, is to combat that with some facts and how and what we think. Like, I don't think anyone that's going to be on this podcast is going to be necessarily completely behind 100% Bitcoin and don't think there will be faults, because like anything else, there are bugs that need to be worked out. And technically, Bitcoin is still in beta as a protocol.
Bitcoin is incredibly raw as a protocol. And I mean, to piggyback off of what you're saying, you know, I wouldn't even phrase it personally as that I, you know, believe in Bitcoin or have faith in Bitcoin. You know, I have examined and read and, you know, looked at the information that's out there right now, and it's something that I think has a lot of potential and is interesting. And that's why I'm choosing to engage in it and spend time in the industry. You know, there may be more information that comes to light, and I'm like, oh man, Bitcoin sucks. Don't really know what that would be.
Yeah.
But it can be out there. So, I mean, I think it's just grounding our discussion in, you know, rational thought and evidence.
Yep, absolutely. And that's the best way to have any kind of discussion about anything technical or to do with computers in general. And I think that's something in our podcast we're going to be talking about, in addition to many other things. I'm sure we're going to get massively off topic on times. And, you know, I think it'll be fun, though, and it'll be interesting to most involved. And I think our conversation with Shooter was really awesome. He had some great points, and he really is knowledgeable about everything that, you know, we're involved with, everything that this podcast is involved with. And he made the perfect first guest. And, he, you know, he's someone that really has put a lot of his personal backing into not just Bitcoin, but he's really into decentralization, and he's really into how it can help the arts. And I think that's a very valid cause. And I really do think that folks like him are going to be the ones that bring it into new industries and new business models, and not necessarily the businesses we're seeing sign up, but brand new fields that you're never going to see. There's going to be folks that look at him and go, like, not only is he high profile, but he was really forward thinking because he understood this. He got this. And, you know, there's not many folks with that kind of pedigree and pop culture like Shooter that really can talk about things like this. You know, no one, in fact. I haven't not heard many people other than businessmen and economists or, you know, tech folks. I'm talking about, like, entertainers, mainstream media and underground media that really have the depth of knowledge that Shooter does. And I think it's something that he really cares about. And in a few years, it wouldn't be surprised if you see him as the next person selling a company to an Apple, like a Dr. Dre, because he has ideas, and that's really what matters. And they're crazy, but that's the point. And they're not that crazy if you're us, because we're seeing them and we're like, we agree. You know?
I mean, the only ideas that are disruptive and have value are crazy ideas.
Exactly.
You know?
Electricity, I'm sure, was a crazy idea, and someone did it, and someone actually harnessed it. It wasn't an idea, it existed, but you know what I'm saying? Someone harnessed it and created it in a usable form. And I think with Shooter, you know, here's someone who has had years of, you know, celebrity. His entire life he's had celebrity. And it's something where he sees this technology coming, and he's doing everything he can to promote it. And it's great. So I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. We couldn't have had a better first guest on here. And in the future, this will be a mixed mash of different hosts and different guests. And it's going to be very different. We're not trying to replicate any other podcast, because there are Bitcoin podcasts out there. They do a wonderful job. Ours is going to be a little different. It's not just going to be focused on Bitcoin, but Bitcoin is the hub that brought all the people working on this together. So it will be a subject.
I think that's a good way to put it, is that, you know, Bitcoin is a commonality that we all share in terms of our interests, in terms of how we met each other. But I personally expect this podcast to sort of weave in and out of technology, business, futurism, philosophy, music, art. I mean, you know, as an example, you mentioned having higher profile guests. I'll go ahead and say that my moonshot guest is, I would love to have Kanye West on the program one day.
Mine, and I think Shooter would agree, is Trent Reznor. Those are
that
mine.
That would be awesome.
Kanye would be fun. Those are our goal guests. And I think that that's something, when I say goal guests, you know, there are people in the community in general that we want to get interested in Bitcoin. And folks like that are very forward thinking. Kanye West's design aesthetic is fantastic. You know, Trent Reznor is someone who was a very early supporter of many different technologies, did the score for the first Quake game. I mean, this guy's been around forever doing this kind of stuff. So those are the folks that we want to see get aboard the Bitcoin train, because they've definitely had years of really just knowledge in this field and everything else. So I guess with that being said, let's start the interview, Gentry.
Yeah, awesome. Sounds
right.
Good, Tony.
Cool. Here's Shooter. This is Tony Sakic here with Gentry Sherrill on the Decentralized Podcast. And our very first guest this week, while we're working out the bugs, and Shooter's been gracious enough to put up with us working through bugs during the first 10 minutes here, 15 minutes here, is Shooter Jennings, who's actually a huge fan of decentralized networks, Bitcoin, and a lot of other different technologies coming out, and in his own right is a very famous musician. So I wanted to give the floor to Shooter and first ask you, give us a little more of a background of your history with the internet, with your history with decentralized networks in general, and Bitcoin. How did you hear about Bitcoin? Those three questions. It's kind of a lot, but go ahead.
It's all good, man. I got to say, you know, it's an honor to be on the first podcast here with you guys. You know, you and I met on the phone last week and hit it off very quickly. So it's like, I feel that all my energy in Bitcoin now has a purpose and a direction, knowing you and everything. So it's very nice to be on the show, and I really appreciate it. I hope this show grows, which I know it will. You know, for me, it's so funny because, like, my dad, Waylon Jennings, is like a country singer, and people people that don't know me think that I'm like a motorcycle riding, hunting, like redneck, hillbilly fishing kind of guy. And even though they know I'm in LA, I think they think my life is something that it isn't. But it's like, I was a computer fiend from the moment I set my hands on my first computer. We got an Apple IIe when I was 7. And as I said to you on the phone, it's like the minute I saw this thing, I knew that the possibilities were endless, and I was looking at something that was going to be a big part of my life. And as time went on, I really wanted a PC, and I got a PC and started building my own PCs. I was just so into it, all of it, like the technology and the software architecture and everything was fascinating to me. And the art side of things, and then the music side of things took over later with Trent Reznor, like we were talking about, like when I realized that he was using kind of the same software that I was using, and I started making records and things. I mean, just computers were just so ingrained in my life. I had a bulletin board system. I used to have a FidoNet network and have users and callers every day. And when I was in high school, you know, and so by the time the internet came around, it was like we were ready for it. And it was just so exciting. And then the faster speeds came, and we were constantly connected to the internet, and just learning it as it went and watching it grow has been so amazing. And then comes along, Bitcoin and the algorithm and the blockchain. I was on my honeymoon in Mexico in mid last year. I was sitting at the bar, and I was in Mexico, and a guy from Arkansas sits next to me, whose wife knew an old friend of mine, Bobby Turner, that I grew up with. I started my first band with this guy, Bobby Turner. So I'm coincidentally in Mexico, and the dude next to me is married to Bobby Turner's like elementary school girlfriend. So this guy starts talking to me about Bitcoin. And see, I had about a year before had downloaded the Bitcoin Android wallet, the original one, but I didn't I was very interested in it, but I didn't dive in head first, which I probably should have, because I probably would have made some money, but who cares about that? But ultimately, I didn't really research it and realize exactly what it was. I just knew it was the virtual currency, and I knew about, I already heard about the Silk Road and stuff like that, because I had friends that were like, man, you can buy weed online or whatever, you know. So anyway, the year passes, and I'm on my honeymoon, and this guy sits next to me, and he was telling me about he was explaining the mining process to me, what that is, and the transaction confirmations. And for me, instantly, I was instantly infatuated, and I was like I was always into the folding home thing. I thought it was very cool the way that the network of decentralized machines and all sharing computing power. So here he goes and explains this to me, and I just was very fascinated, and I did not know that stuff about Bitcoin yet. And before I even was home, I had researched everything. I'd read the white paper. I was just like, within days, I was like completely obsessed. And I realized that it was the most interesting thing technologically I had seen. And it was almost like a part of me that when I was a kid and I was really into the burgeoning internet and I was really into my bulletin boards and all that stuff, and the communication protocols and stuff. I was very into that, and I had kind of not been in that world for a while. I'd moved to LA, I'd become a musician, I'd been touring for years, and there was a part of me, I had been using Macs for to record and stuff. My PC, it sounds ridiculous, but the PC side of me had kind of not been nurtured for years, and I hadn't been on IRC in years, and all of a sudden, there's this thing that that ignited a fire in me, and it gave me purpose again in a weird way. It gave the geeky coding shooter a purpose. And so I just dove straight in, and I got into the mining thing casually just because I thought it was cool, and I still have machines and stuff and I love that. But I really got into the community and the technology and understanding it. and watching it and thinking of new ways to use it and things like that. All that just it got me so excited, and it got me back on IRC. And I'm on there all the time. I'm always on the Freenode channel. And, you know, I reconnected with a lot of my old friends. It's amazing what getting into Bitcoin did just on a personal level for me, and kind of gave me this kind of other, purpose. I realized when I saw it, it was like the first thing since when I first saw a bulletin board system back when I was a kid. It was the first thing I'd seen where I looked at it and I said, man, this is going to be the rest of my life. I know that this is, I'm more interested in this than I have been in anything in a very long time. It's like music and the growing Bitcoin network and what's happening with it and how it can change music and how it can change art and things like that. Like, it just has become my obsession. So, you know, now it's like I'm going, there's not many people out there who get it yet who are like in my field, but I'm doing everything I can to try and make people understand what it is and how important it is. And why, and get on board with it now, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't know. That really answer your question?
No, totally. I think it did a great job. And I think it was fascinating you brought up Folding at Home. I really do, because that was a project, distributed computing project. I know the PS3, they had a connectivity to that. And it was very interesting that worked so well. And it really did, I believe. Everything I heard about it was a massive success. So, you know, this distributing network idea is something that's, it's not new, but it is something where There could be a lot to it, especially as our broadband internet access gets faster and faster.
Yeah, man, for sure. And that's another thing that's so exciting, you know, because that's the major step right now that the thing that's moving the slowest, I think, is that. And I think we're right around the corner. Like here in LA, we just got 300 megabit connections with Time Warner Cable. But unfortunately, it's nowhere near 300 megabits. Like I have the 100 megabit plan and they're about to upgrade me to 300 megabit, and I get like 15, 20 megabit download speeds now, but I know it's going to be right around the corner. I feel, now I don't mean to like change any topics, but just talking tech stuff, I feel that statewide Wi-Fi, if they can just figure this out and they can get this is the business that I think Apple was dumb not to jump on board with now, because I think if they can, like, as we're getting through time, like cell towers and stuff are clearly a thing of the past. Like, they're clearly going to be outdated because, you know, in a car now, and they have, like, I mean, I know that that's also using a cell tower, but you have the Wi-Fi in a car and all that. But I've been to, like, Milwaukee, and they had citywide Wi-Fi, and they were testing it, and it's not put in, but they had full speed, pretty fast speed stuff. Time Warner has all over LA. Like, I have Time Warner, and you drive around and you get Wi-Fi and you pick it up and you can use it and it connects automatically and everything. So, like, to me, that's really going to be what's going to dictate, like, eventually Wi-Fi is just going to be everywhere. I think that whoever owns that can undercut the cell companies and shut them down, like Apple did with the music business. Like, if someone were to get in and put in Wi-Fi everywhere, no one would ever pay for tower. You know what I mean?
Yeah, ubiquitous Wi-Fi is going to be an enormous advancement. Like, just to not have to worry about when you're walking around, do you have connectivity or not? That's going to open a huge amount of opportunity.
Yeah, and
of course, in like a...
Yeah, I also think that, you know, when it comes to Wi-Fi networks in general, I think that's a great idea. And it's something where, you know, there are a lot of business interests against it, which is the issue that I would see. The main issue is when you start talking about that and you start talking about profits of major companies, that's what could be a game changer. But I definitely think it is something that could happen. It's interesting, though, because I hear a lot about it, and it's something that I haven't researched as much as I should have about, because I know that it's completely feasible and doable. You know, it's definitely that. That's not an issue. It's just a matter of how do you get that through to some of the people that are, elected officials, that this is a priority, you know? And I don't necessarily think that people put it as high as a priority as it really should be.
Well, they definitely don't. And they also get plenty of contributions from the existing ISPs and, you know, phone companies that want to keep sort of the illusion of a monopoly going. You know,
the phone companies are the ones who are going to get screwed on this deal. I mean, because they're hanging on to a very ancient technology that they're really kind of hitting a glass ceiling with. And the reality is like, once that they do have 300 megabit, you know, internet run statewide everywhere, and they have Wi-Fi that have stronger, you know, transmitters and things than they do now, like, it'll be over. Like, that whole game will be over. And AT&T, like, AOL has now become like a media company that's mixed with Time Warner and stuff. Like, I mean, sure, there's like, you know, a 20% of the population who are like 70 plus that still have their AOL accounts that still log into AOL to get their email. But otherwise, like, it's just become like a name. And I think that's what's going to ultimately happen with AT&T and stuff. And it's like, why, you know, I think that that's probably why they're holding it off as long as they can. But unfortunately, like, the bad part about this is that at least with that, we have all this competition coming from all different angles of the internet space, because I believe that once you do get the statewide Wi-Fi, if someone like Time Warner is in charge of that, then it's going to be like the worst monopoly that there's ever been, because that's already, they're already challenging net neutrality, and they're trying to make it where they can like slow down competing, you know, websites and things like that, and charge like NBC and these bigger companies more money to get advertising and preferential advertising, like, on it, you know. So hopefully that's why I would love for like a third party or a third and fourth party to come in and tackle this. You know, I would rather Google own all the Wi-Fi than I would like a Time Warner or something, because at least Google's already in a very high state of power, and they have a lot of interest in a lot of areas, and they're really not as much. I mean, they're probably the one who are going to run the fiber optic wires everywhere anyway to allow this to happen. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? But there's always that around the corner. The media is so controlled right now, it's so messed up that it's like, remember when that chick died who like ran like a, she wasn't it like a website for like online game currency, like Second Life and Ultima Online and those kind of things, or World of Warcraft, like, they took Bitcoin for like 5 seconds, but then she died, and she committed suicide, and they said that like a Bitcoin president committed suicide. Like, people in like my kid's school were saying, I heard the president of Bitcoin committed suicide because they're, you know, I'm like, man, that was a site that took Bitcoin for like 5 seconds. But it just goes to show you like the Warren Buffett controlled media and all these people that are like, don't want our money messed with. So like, anytime that shit happens like that, they come in and do, that's why I would be more scared of like a Time Warner being in control than I would a Google, because I do think a Google's not going to fight the Bitcoin thing. But I think a Time Warner or these companies that are owned by the media magnates that are tied heavily into the banking system, like, they're going to be the ones who are going to try and exercise any way to keep a network like Bitcoin from going mainstream.
And I think that the smartest people that are in those companies might be able to see this and say, hey, look, we don't necessarily think we can stop this. We can attempt to, but, you know, it's global. It's hence the name of the podcast, Decentralized. So we may shut down a few users, but we can't shut down the entire network. So how can we best utilize this to our advantage? And I think the smartest businesses are starting to see this and are really joining a board and saying, okay, well, let's make this the best for what we can do and roll with it. And I think that's something where, you know, you really need to see who's forward thinking and who's not. And I mean, and this is echoing my experience in the music industry when I worked for a record label in the past, and, you know, the definite mindset, this was like 2003, and it was a mindset of, you know, piracy is evil, and, you know, we're going to stop this however we can. And I worked at an indie record store where over the door, there was a sticker that says Napster, Nopester. And it was a different vibe. It was like saying, you could not explain that you can't stop this to people. You know, you could say, okay, you can make really good attempts at this, but there is not going to be an easy way to stop this. So the best thing you can do is utilize it to your advantage. And if you admit, once you get past that first, you know, mental block, then usually people's minds become more open. But sometimes it takes, you know, a few years of massive business failure, like the record labels felt when iTunes, before iTunes came out, before something came out that made it, you know, a way that people could purchase music or, you know, and things like that. And I'm not saying those are ideal ways, but I'm saying it was a way that made piracy a little less convenient, because it was more convenient to use iTunes and pay a dollar for a song. And it really was about convenience. Yes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, to be said, like, first of all, those people in those very high positions of banking power that are against Bitcoin, I'd be willing to bet my own life that the person who's screaming the loudest against it has already bought them. And second of all, like, the thing with the iTunes, man, I knew I had an old manager who told me, he worked at Sony in the 90s. And at the very end of the 90s, when Napster was in full effect, they had a business meeting and a guy came in and he said, look, he said, these MP3s, it's really, we think this is going to really change the business. And the people at Sony, the head of Sony and BMG were like, we're not even interested in looking at it until it's 30% of the market. And at the time it was like 10% of the market. And literally within a year, it was like 40% of the market, and they had missed their chance, and iTunes has swooped in and everything. Like, they had their opportunity, but this is where they're short-sighted all the time. This is the problem. The bigger problem is that the people that were handling music and looking out for music were not interested in making a move like this, because at the time the music industry was doing just fine and they were selling millions and millions and millions of Backstreet Boys records and like breaking all kinds of records for the first week sales and all that shit. And then you turn around and you look at this now, and like Backstreet Boys are selling like 2 million records in one week. And now, like, Taylor Swift is like 100,000 records in one week, and it's like a number one album. And the music industry is in pieces, and it's really because the people that were supposed to be looking out for it were not looking out for it when Steve Jobs came in and revolutionized the whole thing. And look, I love him for doing it, but it changed, you know. He literally threw the music business into a depression, like artists and things like that. I mean, almost immediately, which we have not recovered. And it's been, you know, as far as like making money, you know, I'm a ton of, I know like the, like I've always viewed it like as a kid, like you rock and roll stars and stuff. Like you were like, when you grow up, if you're going to do that, you're going to get an airplane and you're going to be like Led Zeppelin and it's going to be amazing. And like, by the time that our generation came to fruition and got there, they're like, oh, sorry, it's closed. We'll see you later. You know, like you can't make any money here. You know what I mean? Like, it just completely changed. And now like some of the most amazing artists are out there starving. But you know, it's at the same time, it's the only time in which you can do something really special and get out there, because we don't have the gatekeepers anymore. So it's double-edged sword for sure. But I think that the monopoly that Apple got on it is a shame, because you know, the technology was there way before the iPod, all of it was there, and that happened. So that's why, you know, in our conversations, like, I know when I saw Bitcoin, I'm like, there's something here, there's a way to do this here, there's a way to decentralize the music industry and have it where artists get paid directly. And, like, there's no reason right now why an artist couldn't put out an album tonight and 100 people buy it and him collect that money now and turn around and use that money to promote his album, which is what the whole big problem is. Because when you're on a record label, you don't get paid for 3 months. So, and they keep 99% of it, and it's just a mess. Like, if someone could actually accept the Bitcoin and actually the confirmation of transaction be stored inside the, you know, the blockchain or some other form of that, whether it be like a name coin type situation or whatever, like, it would just change everything, you know. And I know that for the arts, like this algorithm, this protocol is going to change it. It's going to be directly responsible. I just don't know how yet, but I can just see it, you know.
Absolutely. And I do think that it's something where, you know, there is going to be change, but it's a matter of who gets there first, what precedes music. And I guess what I mean that is, you know, the first way that decentralized networks worked were, you know, similar to bulletin board systems and news groups, where, you know, you had to, you know, still download that entire news group in order to participate and things like that. And I think that it's going to be funny that right now you can send text, you can send contracts, there's things like that. But when that step goes and the broadband's there for, you know, music files, I think music will be the first like that, because it's not going to happen with movies first or television or video.
Like, let's talk about books for a minute, because books, you know, I could send 5 books and an email to you at this point. So I think that's the smallest size. And the reality is I think, like, you could publish a book using the blockchain and using, like, smart contracts or a system like that, like colored coins. Like, you could literally publish a book and post it, you know, in a transaction in which It would be copyrighted. It would be published. It would be distributed if you had things pointing towards that. So I think definitely, like, it's like books weren't ready at all when the internet came out, and then like the music business was like not ready, but had a little bit of foresight. But like the movie industry is like, watched the music industry die, and they're taking every step they can possibly do, because they know once you can attach an entire movie in full HD quality to an email, then their stuff is done, just like the music industry was. And that's coming with, you know, bigger broadband, bigger storage, like, it's coming. So essentially, I think books is the way to start. But it's like, you look at it, I mean, that, you know, that's funny. I've actually never had this discussion about books. I've had the music discussion a million times, but like, and technically, you really could kind of change the way that you publish if you were to go using a blockchain type system, you know, whether you fork the blockchain and, you know, created different trees or whatever. Like, there's a lot of things you could do to, especially if you gave it its own blockchain, but who knows? You know, I think it, for sure, like, publishing of all types, film, music, and books, I mean, you don't need anybody anymore. I mean, you don't have to hire someone to do anything. You know what I mean? It's like, this decentralized network is like the answer to everything.
Well, that's the thing, you know, you've got all these middlemen from these various industries who are still trying to fight and scrap and prove they have some sort of value. But I mean, what is the value of a publisher anymore, when I can just go online and I can post an article or I can put it on a blockchain? And similarly, what's the value of really almost any other distribution channel? You know, the internet at the end of the day is a truly global peer-to-peer distribution channel.
Absolutely. And yeah. I would say the value there is the ease of use. I think that's the value there is, you know, I will say that it's ready, and decentralized networks will be ready when I can feel comfortable and my mom feels comfortable sending her Bitcoin. When my mom's comfortable making a Bitcoin transaction, then I'll say, okay, well, Bitcoin's then, I think, you know, it's going to be mainstream. We're getting there. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, when and what's going to be the thing that puts it over. You know, I think that we don't know that, but I think it'll happen, and it's going to happen, I would say, probably in the next few years. I don't necessarily think it'll happen tomorrow, but I do think that, you know, when you're challenging something like money, or, you know, you're really challenging actually centuries of something that's been taught from generation to generation and has been a fact of life. So when you have that and you're challenging that, immediately, of course, people are going to be very angry about it. They're going to be very resistant about it, or they're going to say, why would I want to use this? And my favorite response when I get talking about Bitcoin is, why would I use that? You know, everything works fine here. And I look around and I go, does it? Does it really? Like, are you really happy with this? Are you really happy with, you know, different aspects of the financial system? And I don't want to, you know, point a finger or anything. That's not what we're here to do. We're just here to talk about the technology. But I always like asking that question, because it's very easy to, you know, to pay for something and swipe your credit card and pay and not think about it, and not think about, you know, the network that's backing that, you know. And you also have to realize that the network that's backing that has a 60-year advantage ahead of, you know, ahead of Bitcoin. So when you see things like last year, Netflix talking about using peer-to-peer for their streaming service, like, I thought that would have been fantastic. I really do. But I also think that the growing pains would have been harsh, because what happens to the episodes on Netflix that not many people care about? They're not going to have as many seeds. They're not going to have as many people online to share it. You know, there are some obstacles that the decentralization movement, for lack of a better term, needs to overcome. And I think they are slowly. You know, it's basically every technology that comes out is a little better than the previous, like all technology works. And, you know, once that happens, it's a matter of, you know, who's there first, who's putting the right money behind it, who's putting the right, you know, is it open source? Is it not? You know, everyone that I know that I work with is really heavy into open source technology. Most in this field of decentralization are, not all. You know, I think that's important too. And that's, things like that are very important to think about. And, you know, of course, when movies and TV shows and video streaming happens, then it's going to be video games. And then, you know, it's going to keep going. This isn't something that ends. And I think that's, you know, studying history will help you kind of see where it's going in the future.
Yeah, man. I mean, of course. But, you know, like, where you're talking about your mom being something as comfortable as your mom sending it. Like, that's true. But, like, my mom knows how to PayPal me. And like, I could literally, if I had the time and care to do this, and I know you could too, with like two good programmers, you know, two good coders, could make a a website that looks and functions exactly like PayPal. I mean, and all it does is send Bitcoin transactions, and you don't have to put anything in. Like, it's already there to be done that way. And I think that it's there's, you know, a lot of issues like that people maybe don't understand, but like, you know, what I'm trying to say is like, it actually is, could, like, your mom could actually learn to send Bitcoin transactions and it not be an issue, especially if you had, like, you know, aliasing of addresses and things that made it easier, similar to like Skype, because I'm sure like your Skype, your real identification is not your name. Your name is an alias for like a long account string that it's going to log you as. And it's the same kind of thing with Bitcoin. So like, to me, we're already there in a place where it could be easy enough for your mom to do it. What it really is it's waiting for the effect to take place on the banking system. Cause the effect, it's like the virus has already been injected into the water supply and the people have already drank it. And it's like, we're just waiting for like the effect. And it's like, that's why like people like Warren Buffett, like who are richer than sin and have all the world's government and media in the palm of their hand. Like, of course he doesn't want to be that to happen, because then if Bitcoin becomes a reality and the banking systems, you know, like I said, like on every corner, there's a Bank of America here in Los Angeles. There used to be a record store on every corner. That's sad. That's bittersweet in a way, because, you know, as much as like a Virgin megastore is not a mom and pop music store, it's sad that you can't go get music, but banks and money are not music and records. And the reality is when store value becomes largely mainstream and decentralized, all of those little banks on the corners are going to shut down. And that's what I'm looking forward to, because, you know, that's just an example of the massive growth and dependency that we have on a system in which that is pretty corrupt and very corrupt, you know, amount of money that people work hard for that gets taken from them by all these processes that they have to go through to receive their money or to spend their money and to use their money and to save their money and et cetera, you know? So I think that in that, it's like, even if it's money or if it's a song or if it's a book you published or whatever, like, control over your own property is what is the key here, without having to involve someone else to take a little cut. And that can change the world, you know? I mean, it really can. I mean, just the fact of what you could do. I mean, like in California here, a lot of like workers and a lot of like men and women come from Mexico and they work and they send money home to their family and their children who live in Mexico. So like this, they can work, you know, basically 20%. It's like they all of a sudden are working 20% harder, you know, because they don't have to deal with all these companies like the bank and then the Western Unions or whatever it is like they have to do to send money and things like that. Just on a small level like that, if they were able to actually just get like some guy paid me, you know, some guy came over here and was looking for work and I put him to work and to repair, like, you know, whatever, a roof on a house, and paid him with just like, sent him some Bitcoin immediately, and he sent the Bitcoin home, like within a, you know, as he worked, he could be paying for his family, and he wouldn't have to be waiting. And it's just, there's so many things like on that really low level of like basic level.
Absolutely.
How this thing could just change the world, you know?
Yeah, and to hit off of the whole usability point, you know, Tony, you talking about how does my mother use it? The analogy that I really like is comparing where we are with Bitcoin to like TCP/IP on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, if you told somebody, and I'm sure people had this reaction in like the early 90s, late 80s, okay, you know, you're going to go type in, you know, 128.252.13.101, and that's, you're just going to make a note somewhere that's like ESPN.com, they would have thought you were batshit crazy.
Yeah.
But that was the core technology. Now you look at it 20 years later, and we've got DNS. You know, we've got a plethora of new businesses, new business models, and just game-changing technologies that have all been built on top of the opportunity provided by that little set of, you know, four numbers with a dot in between. We still have a ways to go with Bitcoin. I think that the way Bitcoin is going to look when it's mature is going to look very, very different from how it does now, which is also really awesome because that means that we all get to be involved in this while it's growing. I think this is a phenomenal opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like being around on the internet, you know, and there's been a few different phases of the internet where everything changed, you know, from the beginning stages to the mid stages of the AOLification of the internet. I would call it 1996-ish to probably 1999 to, you know, that second where more people got broadband. So everything was really customized for broadband, you know. The third, which is the past few years. Yeah, exactly. And you see different evolutions of it. And when you see different evolutions of it, it really does change. And it usually does become easier to use. And new services are added, new things to do. Like, you know, we're making this call over Skype. This is something that would be new. The first voice over IP I remember hearing about was in 2002-ish. That was very easy to use. And it was called Dialpad, I believe. And you know, things have changed a lot since then. I don't think that was the first one, but it was the first one that I remember seeing that was easy to use. And that's, to me, that's the other thing, is easy to use. Because right now, when people say, why would I use Bitcoin? I say, well, here's why. Because it's new, and because you'll be one of the first people to use it. And if you understand it now, you're going to be guaranteed to understand it in 5 years when it gets easier and more people are using it, which is going to give you an advantage in a lot of ways. And that's one of my definite, I hate to use selling points, but one of the things I definitely like to say about it. And it's like any technology, usability grows, you know, and then the market share grows as well. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that those that are very negative on it are all necessarily negative on it because of a certain, because of a certain agenda. But I would say that they're probably negative on it out of ignorance just as well, because the idea to them is just so foreign. Because, you know, money's money. Money's what you put in the vending machine to get a soda. Money's what, you know, you spend to do everything you need to live. So here's this thing that apparently has no physical backing. And that freaks people out because it's something new and different. And, it, you know, people thought that no one would pay for digital files online. Well, that's not true. You know, and it takes that time to get in there and to get in the system, to get in the mindset where people are used to, you know, using it and feel comfortable using it. And it also has a lot to do with where people can use Bitcoin, how people can save it, how people can acquire it. There's a lot of questions that are, you know, smart companies are figuring out answers to. And, you know, once those get answered, that's going to be the boom. And, you know, I think you're right with art, that this is going to be something where it will have a big effect on it. And I'm surprised that there's not more folks within the art scene in general and different arts for whatever they may be, that are learning about this and trying to figure out, hey, how can I best use this to my advantage right now as an artist? You know, how can I use this to monetize whatever I want to do because I need to make a living doing whatever I need to do? And those are things where, you know, folks like yourself are really ahead of the game. And, you know, I always say there's nothing definite about Bitcoin lasting forever. There never will be. There's nothing that you can predict for the future that's 100% true. But if you study the past and you study history, history is definitely on Bitcoin's side. It's on, you know, altcoin side. It's on that side. So you see that and you go, okay, this is probably going to happen. Let me learn about this now. So when I get it now, I can be one of the first. And usually those that are the first end up really, you know, enjoying the benefits of it for many years to come, economically and, you know, socially. And as, you know, as some people will say, as even like a thinker or as someone who was able to foresee technology, you know, it wasn't, if you've seen this happen in other industries, I think that's why in music, to me, it was so glaring. And that's why I jumped aboard early about 2 years ago, was because I saw what it did to music. And then I saw music's reaction and the music industry's reaction. And it was just bewilderment, confusion, like who would do this? Why would they do this? Oh, they're stealing. And it's like, well, okay, you know, maybe they are, maybe they're not. I'm not here to debate that. What I am here to debate is they're doing it. That doesn't mean, you know, let's see how we can monetize this, right? Because we can't stop this. We could put fake MP3s up on Napster. That's not stopping anything. The thing you need to realize is that someone is interested in the music enough to download it, which is a good thing, which means they care. So let's make those people that care and let's turn them into, you know, let's turn that into different business. Let's turn them into fans that will come out for a show. Whatever it may be, just, you know, not necessarily stopping it there and trying to stop them from downloading in the first place. And I think that this whole movement to stop Bitcoin now is really not seeing the forest through the trees. If you're going to try to just stop it, speak negative, it's like, well, look, Mt. Gox crashed, you know? As you said, as we always hear, the CEO of Bitcoin died. All these things happen, and it hasn't killed it yet. So it's like, and you go, okay, well, you know, when do people kind of break up and go, okay, well, it doesn't look like this is going to go away, so how do we use this best? And I think that's the question that doesn't get asked enough, is instead it's fighting for territory. It's more like, we need to stop this. We need to stop this. And it's that mindset. And that's like, instead of that, like, you know, what would have happened if, you know, the folks that were, you know, making, you know, horse and carriages and buggies, you know, really try, and they did try to stop, you know, the car. They tried to stop the assembly line. They tried to stop Henry Ford. They really did try. And, you know, obviously it went nowhere because people saw the car and went, that's sweet. I want a car. And, you know, and that's what happened. And eventually that spoke. It didn't kill the buggy manufacturers, but it really slowed them down almost and, you know, really made them a very niche product. And if they were, you know, if they had that foresight, maybe they would have said, okay, well, there's something in this. Let's take our profits this year and invest a little bit in this. That would have been a better, yeah. That would have been a much better reaction for them.
Yeah, see, it seems as if to me that, like, I mean, that's a great point with the cars. I never even thought of it that way. But that is a great point because you look at this and you know, it's like money has been just as if the horse has been around for, I mean, since the dawn of, you know, creation and animals and the evolution got wherever it was that the horse, where a dude was like, man, I could get on the back of that and ride from one place to another faster than walking. Like, they stuck with that model. I mean... I mean, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So for them to come, thousands and thousands of years. So for them to come along and say, hey, we're going to change travel altogether with this machine we built, you know that they were like, no way anybody's going to be able to afford this. No way anybody's going to want this death trap, like blah, blah, blah. And like within 5 minutes, it was over. The horses were free, you know. And it's like you look at that. And like you said, like, we've had this system in place. It really, like, you know, our nation changed when the Federal Reserve came into play very much. And it's like, you know, this generation and the generation before have just been here with the Federal Reserve the way it is, the quote-unquote inflation control and things like that. Like, we've come to accept this as the norm, but, like, the Depression era – grandparents and stuff, I would be really curious to hear what someone thinks of this if they were a smart older person who was around during the Depression and then saw the creation of the Federal Reserve and saw these little different steps. I'd be very curious to hear what they thought, because I bet you money that they would be more interested in this than your average kind of older generation that's just willing to sweep it off and just say this is some kind of new thing. I mean, clearly it's going to be like, it's not going away. I mean, the reality is like, unless you are able to somehow force every single person that's ever owned, held, used, whatever, supported the network, like, you're never going to end it. It's not the Beanie Babies. It's not like Bitcoin's going to be like unpopular in a couple years. You know, it's like grandparents aren't buying Bitcoin in mass for their grandkids so that they'll have them forever. I mean, maybe there's a couple, but the reality is like, it's not about the value day to day at all. It's the fact that you don't need a third party. It just, that's it. Like that is what it is. It's what BitTorrent did. It's like taking that to a more global scale. And money, of course, it's going to be in the form of a currency because it's a store of value. So naturally, each store of value is going to have a value. It, you know, they could have just marketed this as not a currency and as just a safe of sorts, a digital safe in a way. You know, and each slot is worth so much, but. It's just, that's what it is. It is a currency. That's essentially how it works, but it's a store of value. And that's going to change everything, man. I mean, I get so excited about it, and I just look it up at night and, you know, just read more, read about everything. Like, I love the BitSat thing. I didn't know it by name when you said it to me in a text, but I knew what you're talking about. Not sending the node into space. Like, people say to me all the time, what happens when the internet goes away? Well, it's like, well, if we had a great shutdown of the internet, I know my Bitcoin would be safe forever until they brought it back up, because A, there's a billion copies of the blockchain. There are a million nodes out there going on, you know, a bunch of them. And then with things like that, like, your value is stored in the value the stored between the blockchain and the two keys. And if like I have it in a paper store, like I have a Trezor, like for instance, like that thing, you know, if it breaks, I can use my seed to get it out or whatever. Like on a new unit, I can access the money, everything. Like the internet goes down, as far as I'm concerned, my Bitcoin are safe. You know what I mean? Until the internet comes back, like everything else may be screwed, but I believe that's safe. It's in the equation, and it's between the two numbers and the blockchain. Those two, as long as there's a copy of the blockchain and my the two keys, I'm sorted. You know what I mean? So to me, it's like so brilliant. There's no way you can really naysay the technology.
Absolutely. And it's really cool that, you know, there's things like the Trezor coming out, or Trezor, I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. I will go with
those. I don't either. It's yeah. Foreign. It's great though.
It is. And things like that are making it easier for people to securely store them, because I think, you know, another issue when I always go to the ease of use thing is, you know, explaining cold storage, paper wallets, the different ways you can store it. That's another option. That's another, you know, field that's definitely going to need to get easier, because it's something where there's a lot of things that really freak people out of when they come into it. And no one wants to be that person that spends the wrong money, or, you know, or not necessarily the wrong money, but like sends it to the wrong wallet or something like that, or gets a character wrong. So, you know, I think there's a lot of not just education, but, you know, a lot of just overall issues like that that need to be explained better, which is something, you know, that a lot of companies out there are really trying and trying to do and trying to do well.
That'll happen, man. There'll be a new industry standard for addresses first. I believe that'll be the first thing that's going to come around the corner. And just like it's so-and-so at so-and-so.com, they're going to come up with something similar to the .com thing, and it's going to be a way to do the addresses. It'll be super easy, and it'll be done. Like that, to me, aliasing the addresses will be the first thing, and that will be the biggest step in making it really – people really get it. Cause I mean, not everybody's QR code enabled. Like I'm fine with it. You know, I got no problem with the way it works and everything, cause I'm used to it. And you know, there's a million ways to do stuff, but I'm also used to like PGPing, like on freenode.org, like, you know, sending like validating your account in the open trade channels and stuff too, which nobody really that stuff gets really complicated. So it's like, if you look at, once they figure out the address thing, that'll be kind of one of the biggest steps, you know, and I think that's just right around the corner. There's like, I've read several things about several companies doing that, and it seems like a pretty easy first step, you know.
Yeah, I absolutely, and I think it will be definitely going there. And I think that the other thing is, you know, and that's something where other companies are doing a good job, is making sure that there are companies and places to spend your Bitcoin. Because, you know, if it's funny, because I've been doing a little studying for Black Friday this year, and did the different merchants that are accepting it this time this year that didn't last year, and it's grown ridiculously huge. And, you know, it's not like, I think everyone in the community, rather, at least the Bitcoin community, wants these giant steps. It's like, no, that's not the way it's going to happen. It's going to be smaller steps. You know, they're going to be big companies, but they're not going to just all jump on board all at once. That's not the way it works. I think it's like within the music industry itself, we've seen it a lot, you know, with people we've worked with and people that we spoke with, and yourself included, that, you know, people are getting this, and they're starting to process it and say, oh, hey, this is awesome. You know, this is cool. Let's see how we can use this to our advantage. There's a lot of things that are coming up real close, I think, that are going to change a lot of how people communicate on the internet. And I think there's many reasons for that. Security reasons, you know, financial reasons, technology reasons, you know, many different reasons for that. But they're all kind of converge. And, you know, folks like you and I are definitely on the ground floor of something here, where we can talk about it and say, hey, this is where we think it's going. Do we know? Of course we don't know. But do we think? Yeah, we think. We think this is what's going to happen. You know, this is the way it could go. And, you know, I know it's something where with you, you accept Bitcoin on your websites, right?
Yes. With our label, I do. And I mean, originally we set up a store, but now we just straight do through BitPay, you know, accept Bitcoin and hold it. Yes.
Absolutely. It's awesome. So it's good you're holding it too. So it's something where you're not, you know, converting it to US dollars or euros, you're holding on to it, which is awesome. And I know that it's on bcrmedia.com and shooterjennings.com both do accept that. I wanted to give your plugs in there for sure. I'll give you a minute.
I'm the worst. I never plug myself on these things. My manager gets so mad I just want to talk.
I'll make sure you get plugs for everything that's coming up too, because I think there's also another project we're going to be working on the next month or two that's going to be pretty awesome. So believe me, this is not going to be the last time you hear Shooter Jennings on this podcast, and it will also probably be in better quality. And when I say probably, I mean it will. This is our first podcast, so we're working out the bugs here. But you know, meeting you here was awesome, because you know there's a lot of people that really do know a lot about Bitcoin, and then there's a lot of people that are very interested in Bitcoin, and it's up to the people that know a lot about it to clue in the ones that are interested in it, because usually once you get into it, it becomes something, not an obsession, but it becomes something that you become really passionate about. And once that light switch goes off, you go, okay, I get it now, and this is a cool idea. Like, you know, they may not be the most converted, but they're usually converted to some degree, and they think, okay, there could be something to this.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that I'm probably one of the more, at least in our office, which isn't, you know, the greatest, you know, even-minded sample, but I'm probably one of the more conservative in terms of my view of Bitcoin. You know, when I came to BitPay, I'd heard of Bitcoin, you know, I'd read a little bit about the Silk Road, but I was not a believer. But as I understood that it was a technology and not just a currency, that was really where my interest came from. And, you know, I'm not going to go, you know, be out there doing the anarcho-libertarian, like, spiel, but I am going to be out there supporting this, because I think that in one fashion or another, it's going to be an enormous impact on society and the economy.
Absolutely. And it's something where I wish, like, I think a lot of people do hear about it from, because they heard of Silk Road in the news. And I wish, I wish more news places would report that the Silk Road is like a very minor part of what Bitcoin is. The Bitcoin network performs way more transactions for goods and services that are not on the Silk Road. And it's something where, you know, I don't necessarily love that that has become like synonymous with it, but it has. So I guess, you know, you can't change history, but what you can do is say, here, you know, okay, yeah, you can use it on Silk Road, but you know, you can use Bitcoin at all these other companies the same way that you can use the printed dollar bill to purchase illegal goods as well, or you can use it at any establishment within walking distance. We want to make it so Bitcoin can be used in any establishment within walking distance, and
you're right, dude, and it's right there. I mean, I'm just gonna say this: the Silk Road was awesome. I mean, I know that we're not supposed to say that, and everybody's like trying to steer it. But first of all, the Silk Road is what broke Bitcoin into the mainstream, really. And second of all, man, if you ever went on there, forget about it. I mean, here's one thing. This is all terrible, you know, whatever. There's drugs on there. And it was hilarious, because it was like a pot. I'm not trying to like be negative in the impact of Bitcoin, but everybody needs to grow up on that issue, because Silk Road was just – here's a brilliant technology, and someone very quickly found a way to do that. Just like when the internet first came out, it was like, holy crap, we can make a total, like a bunch of porn sites. Like, it immediately became Porn Central before everybody took it over, you know. Anyway, like, my point is that yes, but let's pretend it wasn't even a Bitcoin site. Like, let's pretend that they took regular money. Like, as far as the site goes, man, that site was hilariously awesome. I mean, there was a guy who was selling a thing one time, and I wanted to buy this. This is terrible, but it was a thing that where you could print up key cards to hotel rooms. Like, you could, like, go and put this thing in the slot in a hotel room, and then it would make a key. It would activate that key to that room. And I daydreamed, because it was so hard for me to keep on the road and make money. I was like, maybe we should just sneak into hotels at night and use that thing and just go in an empty room, you know. But I mean, it was just hilarious to go on the site, though, because it would have like a pile of cocaine, and then the name of the cocaine was like scratched with a finger, or like the name of the meth, like, so it was like written on a desk. Like, of course they're going to get caught. They're selling drugs on the internet, and there's IP things, and there's going like that. But that was just what it was. If there was no Bitcoin, someone would have found a way to do it with PayPal, or I'm sure that they have, or something. You know, it's like ultimately, like, that was what broke it to the mainstream news, and that was what I think everybody's first assumption. It's like, oh, it's for illegals and narcotics and things like that. And it's like, man, you've been able to buy drugs. Like, at least like the kids of the world were getting their drugs safely sent to their house, instead of wandering down to the ghetto with their brother's like shady friend and possibly getting hurt. Like, at least like it was like a, you know, a nerdy kid's haven for like being able to get like acid without their mom knowing or something. It's like, you know, I don't know, man. I'm not I'm not so conservative about it. And I'm like, I'm thankful for the Silk Road, because I think that had that not happened, that Bitcoin would still be largely under the radar. And I think that all that quote unquote negative press is kind of what brought it to the attention of a lot of positive places. And I think that, you know, yes, it's drugs are bad, okay, and all that. But like the concept of what that was and the revamping of that concept with the open bazaar and the idea of that, it's like I think it was just naturally going to be underground to begin with, which is going to attract some shady shit. But it's like I think that, you know, I think people are starting to understand. I think that argument is slowly dying because everybody knows that, like, everybody who messes around Bitcoin isn't trying to get people killed.
I don't know if that's true. And I'll tell you this, and this is the reason I brought it up, is because, you know, as Gentry and I do both work for a Bitcoin company, we definitely see, you know, the responses of, oh, isn't that for drugs? And it still happens a lot, and not among probably the crowds that either of us run through, but the crowds that pick up the morning paper in a print form every morning and read it from front to back.
See, I would to a certain degree agree with you, but I actually also have to say that I think there is merit to what Shooter's saying. You know, the first way that I heard about Bitcoin was reading Ars Technica and seeing an article about Silk Road. You know, if you think of some of the big players, so like what popularized mining, or what, you know, popularized and brought to the mainstream the idea of Bitcoin, so that it was something that at least was a term people had heard. It was Silk Road. And I mean, even more specifically, you know, you can argue that, like, people, yeah, they were selling weed on there, but they were saying, you know, here's the chemical composition of my weed, you know, it's this much THC. Like, it's kind of better than when you're going down to the corner and you don't know what, you know, your dealer has put in there.
Mm-hmm.
I say your dealer, you know, in the third
yeah,
person.
Yeah, in the third person. Yeah.
It's and all... then they had that dude there that was, like, personally testing all the drugs. Remember that?
Yeah, I did.
That guy was hilarious that they had that guy on there doing that. He's like, yeah, I tried this PCP. It's great. And you're like, sweet, I'm going to order that. No, I mean, I don't know. You know, like you said, largely, you know, that, like, when the internet first came out, there was so, and became, started becoming mass adopted. I say it like it was a Nintendo game when it first dropped. No, but like there was so many negative things going on, and there was like so much stuff. There's always going to be like the rapist on Craigslist, and there's always going to be the dark side of things, and those are going to be the things that get people's attention and say, oh, that's bad. Just like when I was a kid. I mean, don't you feel like it's the same thing as this in a way? Like when I was a kid, I remember being in school and people saying, you know, that Axl Rose, he crapped on stage, or like that, you know, what's his name? Kurt Cobain. I've heard he was peeing on stage and terrible stuff happening. I mean, it's like, whereas like, you know, like Kurt Cobain is like leading a generation. I mean, unfortunately, you know, it didn't end so well for him, but like that was, yeah, your parents are all, there's always like that grandparent that's like, you know, that shirt looks demonic. And you're like, you know, what are you talking about? It's a smiley face with X's over the eyes, you know, whatever. Like there's always kind of that naysaying thing, but that always kind of is about, because all the negativity always comes out in the press about these things because they're revolutionary, you know, like Nirvana was revolutionary and this is revolutionary. And like the negative always rises to the top first because it's the easiest thing for people to talk about. You know, it's like, because grandma's not going to talk about like the early, you know, Bitcoin core development and the breakthroughs that they had that were positive. Like, they didn't care, but when it's like this place gets busted, like that's a sign that like this thing is you better watch it, you know? It's just like Napster. Just like everybody got their first wind of MP3s at Napster, and it was like all of a sudden Metallica like sues all the fans, you know? It's like, wait a second, something really big is here. If that's happening, something big is here. And that's kind of the way that I look at it. So yes, obviously there's going to be the person who picks up the paper newspaper and reads the thing and says, this isn't Bitcoin for drugs, but like that person is going to be irrelevant very soon if they're still picking up a paper newspaper anyway. You know what I mean? Like that generation is just getting old, and kids that are born nowadays will grow up hearing about Bitcoin from the day they're born. And that's just, mind-blowing, you know?
It is, and it's really cool. And, you know, it's something where, you know, it's awesome to have folks like you on board. And we just wanted to also say thank you. And at this time, you know, give you a chance to plug anything else you wanted to plug coming up. Because as I mentioned before, we have some good, cool things in works with the company I work for, BitPay and Shooter. We're going to have some awesome stuff we're working on. And, you know, we're going to use this podcast as a way to get some of that out. But we're also going to use our traditional channels. As you know, this is our own podcast. So this is something that is outside that sphere. But it's also something where the people that are speaking right now, Gentry and myself, both do work for BitPay, and it's something that we both love. You know, we love the company we work for, and we want to promote our stuff too. So we're not going to do mindless shilling, but we do want to, you know, say that.
I was hoping for mindless shilling.
BitPay.com. But we do want to give you a chance, Shooter, to promote everything that you have that's either coming out or new releases and everything like that.
Well, man, first of all, I do have to say, like, I love the company. I love BitPay. Like, I've been aware of you, you know, so it's been nice to, since you guys started, so it's been nice to really get to know you, Tony, and just kind of finally, like, connect with somebody in this world, because I've been kind of out on my own. Like, I've been trying to go to, like, meetups and stuff, but I can barely ever make that happen. Like, I'm trying to meet other people, and I met a couple people in the business. No, let's take that away. I've met a couple people that had similar interests to me that weren't necessarily working for companies, but they were like Bitcoin enthusiasts. And just like anybody, like, some people are into it for certain reasons, some people are other. Like, I see some people who are just want to make money on it. And it's like that's cool, but like, we never end up becoming friends. It's like people that are like you said, man, Gentry, that the technology itself is what kind of captivated you the most. And that's what it was for me. And it's people that are into that side of it tend to be the people I think that really are in for the long haul and want to make the lasting, want to change the world with it. So as far as I'm concerned, I feel like BitPay, especially your angle from day one, coming in and really facilitating easy, free transactions for people and making it incredibly easy for a business who's not tech savvy to take and accept Bitcoin, and whether they hold it or they cash it out or whatever, like, you make that very easy. And you did amazing with Mastodon, and you've done amazing with all the companies that you work with. So it's like, you know, for me, I'm team BitPay all the way. But you know, like, I have a record out called Don't Wait Up for George. That's a tribute EP to George Jones. I have it on 10-inch white vinyls and CD and digital, all available at bcrmedia.com. And you can pay in Bitcoin, of course. And then I have a record coming out in January that's a tribute to Giorgio Moroder. And I actually want to talk to you guys about doing some things in this world with that record, because I really think that this audience really will appreciate that record. And I think that we can experiment with some different things with that album in Bitcoin. But also, the Black Friday release is coming up. I mean, we're getting all that locked down, but we have Mick Foley and some unreleased Waylon Jennings. It's going to be out as part of Record Store Day's Black Friday, and we are doing everything we can to tie that into Bitcoin Black Friday. So, you know, this will be the third time I've seen Bitcoin Black Friday happen. I wasn't really that into it the first time, but I was aware of, like, of its existence, right? Because it wasn't the first one. Last year was not the first one.
No, last year was the second one, I think.
Yeah, okay. So I was aware of the first one, but I wasn't really deep into Bitcoin yet. But, like, when the second one came around, I had been messing around with it for 6 months. So it was, like, awesome to see that happen and see all those companies. I can't wait to see this year, because last year was, like, it had grown exponentially, like, and it was just the first boom. It was right before the price boom and everything. Like people were going crazy. And I know this year it's going to be like 100 times that.
Yeah, that's definitely the hope.
Yeah, it will be. It's obvious that it will be. I mean, if I can, you know, like, if Dish Network, man, if they had, like, in LA better internet than Time Warner, I would have switched immediately, have my bill just extracted and paid, like, easily, like, dude, like, everything in life I would pay in Bitcoin if I could. Like, I order all my computers via Newegg and get all that stuff, pay via Bitcoin. I'm like, right now I'm like kind of saving a little bit because I want to buy my daughter a MakerBot, because I know she's like really into art and computers, and I know she would be crazy to be able to do 3D printing. So I'm kind of just waiting for me to collect a little more money, make a little more Bitcoin, and then I'm going to buy that off like Newegg, you know, like I'm watching, there's restaurants here, there's an ATM in town. Like I go to the ATM, if I make a little extra money, I'll throw in, like, I'll just put a little into my savings, my Bitcoin savings, you know, through a couple 40s in or whatever. Just kind of, there's, you know, to be able to live off of that and not have to deal with like banks and checkbooks and credit cards and dues and, you know, interest and things, I would just, my life would be so much easier. So I'm just waiting for that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Shooter. We're going to let you go, and thank you very much. We're going to have you on very soon again.
I'd love to. Thank you. It's an honor to be on the first one.
Take care.
It really is. Thank you so much, guys.
Take care.
Thanks.
And with that, we wrap up the first episode of Decentralized. Thank you all for joining us. If you'd like to check us out some more, you can find us on the web at decentralizedtheworld.net or follow us on Twitter at decentralizeall. And don't forget to follow today's guest, Shooter Jennings, at Shooter Jennings. Of course, our hosts are the amazing Tony Sakic and Gentry Sherrill. You can find them on Twitter as well, at Tony Swish and at Gentry Sherrill. I am Chaz Ferguson, our producer. See you guys next week.